Hi, I want to thank you so much for joining me for this interview. As I let you know, AGU is celebrating our 100th anniversary, and so we are celebrating several science days, and we asked you to be part of this interview for your expertise in diversity and inclusion for LGBT and STEM Day. So can you please say your name, title, and place of employment?
Sure, my name is Carolyn Brinkworth, and I'm the Chief Diversity Officer for the University Corporation for Atmospheric Research, UCAR, which runs NCAR, the National Center for Atmospheric Research.
Can you tell me your earliest memory of being interested in science?
Yeah, so I mean, I think I've always been interested in science ever since I was very, very small. And so I remember a lot of coming home from school and watching Star Trek Next Generation, you know, as I dinner with my family. It was one of the things that we did in the evenings, you know. And so I've always grown up with a love of science. My dad was, you know, very technically minded. And so he always helped me repair my cars when I was younger. And, you know, my brother and I would get involved in a lot of, you know, science stuff, not only at school but also at home as well. So it's something I always loved, and certainly then when I started to understand astronomy and get into that, that was the thing that really captured my imagination, and just, you know, it was a thing I just loved.
How or when did you realize science transformed something around you or was transforming you?
That's a great question. I think, again, thinking back to Star Trek, funnily enough, you know, the realization that science could one day allow us to live off the planet Earth was quite an amazing thing. And I think that that's really what grabbed my imagination of thinking about science as a whole, and just that realization that science has this power to be able to create far more for us than we have right now and transform our world. I think that was really sparked my just passion for it. It was revolutionary to me. I don't know that I can put a single finger on one particular thing though, but yeah, certainly again, Star Trek was a big part of that realization for me.
And now it's becoming sort of a reality for everyone that space is our next adventure.
Well, one would hope so. I think we've got a way to go, yeah. We're starting to get there.
What has been your most significant challenges in becoming a scientist? It can be personally, socially, academically, possibly geographically.
I think that one of my biggest challenges was really getting to see myself as a scientist. It wasn't that, and I was always good at science. You know, I breezed through science in high school because I found it incredibly easy. And then went through university where it obviously got a lot harder. And then I went on to do a PhD, which I never really intended to do. It wasn't part of my plan. I'd intended to become a teacher, actually. But then I just got to this point where I felt like I hadn't finished learning. And so as I got to the end of my undergraduate degree, I thought, well, actually, I want to keep learning. I want to keep doing more. But then I got to grad school, and all of a sudden, I got hit by major imposter syndrome. It was partly the fact that people around me were very smart, but they were always fairly smart around me. And it was also part of the, you know, partly my advisor, who's a wonderful, wonderful person. Don't get me wrong. I, you know, really, really care about Tom, and he did a wonderful job in advising me. And at the same time, I think he's probably the smartest man I know. And so we basically ended up in this strange situation where he would start explanations for me for things about halfway through where I needed him to start. And so I'd always be like, well, hang on, back up, you know, back up at least 5 steps here because I didn't understand step one. And so that realization that I really wasn't as smart as him, I think was quite hard for me and really gave me quite a lot of imposter syndrome that maybe I didn't deserve to be here working with him on this incredibly cool project. And funny enough, it was when I was doing my PhD, I had an opportunity to travel to California for 6 months for an internship. And it was my supervisor there who really helped me feel like a scientist. So Don Horde was an amazing advisor, and he genuinely sat down with me and he asked me for my opinion, genuinely curious. And that was the realization where I was like, oh, I am smart enough to do this because this person who's working in this field, you know, really values my opinion, and he's asking me to, you know, come up with ideas for stuff that we can do together. And that was really the realization where I was like, okay, I am good enough to do this. I can do this, and I can actually be a scientist. But it was a long time coming, and I went through a lot of imposter syndrome before I was able to get there. And that wasn't the end of it either. I mean, my imposter syndrome continued throughout my postdoc as well. It's not like it ever ended, but it definitely had a bit of a break at that point where I realized that, you know, even though the people around me were incredibly smart, I probably could hold my own.
Absolutely. This year is a milestone for AGU, as I just mentioned. How do you feel about being part of such a big moment celebrating diversity and inclusion for LGBT and STEM Day during our 100-year anniversary?
You know, I think it's great that we're paying attention to it. I think for so long we have gone through this idea that diversity is not a part of science, right? That our identity are not a part of science, that we have to leave our identities at the door because they're irrelevant to our science. And I think that nothing could be further from the truth. I think that our identities are what make us great scientists in many cases. You know, they bring this richness and this, you know, different perspectives and different ideas to the table that we wouldn't have if we left our identities at the door. So I really love the fact that AGU is pushing to bring our social identities to the forefront. I think that's incredibly important. And I wish that we could do that in more parts of science. I wish that we could embrace this as a critical part of who we are as scientists and not imagine that, you know, the identity of scientist has to take precedence, because I don't think it does. And I think that when we believe that, we harm ourselves as a field, honestly.
I think that's a great tie-in to the next question. Where do you see yourself in the future of science?
You know, the work that I do, so I don't really do a lot of science now, you know, I do more social science, but my astronomy career has, you know, ended, more or less. I actually, funnily enough, I'm on a Nature paper right now that I did do some work for, but it was a long time ago. And so it's this realization, oh, I'm going to get another science publication where I didn't think I was ever going to get one. You know, I thought that I left my science publishing days behind me. But I think that what we're realizing as a community now is that the work that I do now in diversity and inclusion is really critical to the future of science. You know, we are not going to be able to come up with solutions that address the issues that our planet is facing without deep understanding of the cultural and societal and social issues that surround things like climate change, right? And a lot of that comes from communities who've traditionally been marginalized in sciences. So, for example, Native American indigenous communities have a huge long history of incredible resource management, because they had to, because they were forced onto, you know, reservations with very few resources, and they had to manage that in order to survive. And, you know, Native Americans and indigenous folks have this connection with the land that we're slowly, as Western scientists, getting back towards. And they're sitting there going, well, what on earth are you talking about? We've known this for millennia, right? So we have this strange, you know, this situation where we're realizing that we need the, as Western scientists, we need the input of communities who've really gotten this all along. And we're now scrambling to think about how we do that work. And a lot of that requires us to be more culturally competent, to work with folks from those communities, to ensure that science as a whole is diverse and, you know, it is not, you know, homogenous and white and male and straight and all those things. And we actually need to think more about how we do science in order to incorporate different perspectives and different ways of thinking from communities who are not like the people who have traditionally been in this work. And without that, we're not going to get anywhere. We're not going to produce solutions that make sense for people who are living in a reality that is not rich and white. You know, and so how do we create solutions that are going to work and are going to be trusted by communities of color who are often the first, you know, on the lines of defense against climate change? And it's a real question, and it's something that's critical to the work that I'm doing. And fortunately, more people are seeing this as being critical now. So I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that I get to do this work in the science community. And I'm grateful that people are now listening, and that we're seeing this as an important part of what we do.
So AGU values the work that you're doing extremely. And this interview that you're participating in is for our program called Pass Through Science, which we offer to students and early career professionals so they understand what are the options on a career journey and what are some challenges that they might experience if they choose a certain path in geoscience. So what advice do you have for students considering to study Earth or space science?
That's a good question. You know, I want to say it's all going to be okay and you should just go for it. And I think that in many ways that would be lying. So I don't want to say that outright. I think that if you have the passion for it, you've got to have a passion for it, right? You can't go into science half wanting to do it because it can be a hard career and you have to have a belief in yourself and this willingness to work hard and to really love what you do, because I wouldn't recommend that anybody goes and does a PhD without loving the subject, because there's points in a PhD in which you just hate it for most people, you know, and we know that graduate students have pretty poor mental health rates. And so, you know, thinking about how you are going to do self-care, I think, as part of science is probably my biggest recommendation. And you know, making sure that you have outlets, making sure that you talk to people, making sure you have a therapist. I mean, yeah, I've lost count of the number of therapists I've worked with. Just, it's incredibly important for our mental health that we pay attention to that. You know, don't feel like you have to leave your identity at the door. You don't. People may tell you you do, and they're wrong. But thinking about how you are going to deal with folks if you do choose to, you know, honor your identities and for example, for LGBT folks, if you are going to be out, recognizing that that may be an issue for some people. And how are you going to deal with those people when they come up? And how are you going to find your allies? You know, making sure that you find people who believe in you and care about you and that you care about them as well. And so finding those allies is going to be important in everything you do. But yeah, don't isolate yourself. Make sure you get help. Make sure you ask for help and make sure you have a solid self-care plan in place, I think is always going to be an important part of any job, not just science. And I wish that we prioritize that more. I think it's incredibly important.
I agree. I think a lot of students, myself being a recent graduate with my doctorate, we don't always know what options are out there to help us with our self-care. And so it's really important that we know that ahead of time.
Absolutely. And knowing that at universities, you know, there are counseling centers at universities who are there to help. And there are often also identity support groups at universities. You know, I know that when I was actually, funny enough, I wasn't out during my graduate experience, but I was out once I went to Caltech as a postdoc. And so, you know, knowing that there was the Women's Center there, there wasn't yet an LGBT center that was created while I was there. But the Women's Center at least was a space where we could go and get support in many different ways. So, yeah, know your resources for sure.
So those are all the questions I have for you. Is there anything else you would like to add?
I don't think so, not really.
Okay, perfect. So you have been such an asset for this interview process. I really appreciate that you're participating. This is something new that AGU is doing to promote some of the important days that happen each year. So thank you for participating, and I hope to work with you again in the future.
You're more than welcome, Sharon. Take care, yeah?
Okay, bye.
All right. Bye.